alcoholic. I can't believe you came back. Well, one thing I want to make clear, I probably didn't make it clear last week, was when I talk about God, I'm talking about higher power, so that, you know, you can think of your own higher power as your God. But I do it because it's short version, you know. So if I keep saying God, God, God over again, you know what I mean. Step two, we're going to talk about mental health. And the step is, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. We came to, and we came to believe. Our drinking experience has shown that as we strayed away from the normal social side of life, our minds became confused, and we strayed away from the normal mental side of life. An abnormal mental condition is certainly not sanity in the accepted sense of the word. Our study of AA shows that in the mental or tangible side of life, we have lost touch with or ignored or have forgotten the spiritual values that gave us the dignity of man, as differentiated from the animal. We have fallen back upon the material things of life, and these have failed us. We have been groping in the dark. Since no human agency, no science has been able to solve the alcoholic problem, we turn to the spiritual for guidance through AA. Step two deals with mental illness. For however smart we may have been in other respects, whenever alcohol has been involved, we have been strangely insane. It's strong language, but it's true. An alcoholic doesn't act really sane while drinking. Chronic poisoning from alcohol results in compulsive drinking and insane behavior. Willpower is not a factor in recovery. It is a factor when the compulsion has been removed. We find it important to face up to our mental instability. Dodging the truth only results in distorted thinking in opposition to help from a power greater than ourselves. Those of us who really want to recover from the mental illness that alcohol has brought us have successfully used this power. Our sick personalities find a sure source of power and healing in God as we understand Him. Our minds are renewed and our thinking is straightened out. Step two opens up a possibility of a new hope when based upon willingness and faith. What we call this power is a matter of our own choice. But faith in a higher power is a basic law of recovery. It is always evident in the lives of successful members. What they have done, we can do. And all you got to do is look around the room. If you're new in the program, ask an old timer. You know, how do you do this thing? Don't ever be afraid to ask. And I'm sure most of the answers will probably be very similar. But it's important that you ask, because if you need to know. And like I said in step one, no question is silly or stupid. You know, mental handicaps. Oh wait, I'm sorry. By practicing of this step and all the steps, we will gain a conscious contact with this power greater than ourselves, sufficient to live sanely in contented sobriety. Anyone who's been sober for a long period of time and has a conscious contact with God knows what I'm talking about. Other people may not. To me, it's as real as you sitting here. And I would not know what to do if for some reason that conscious contact was ever severed. Mental handicaps stand between us and recovery: our lack of self-criticism. Justification instead defeats an honest look at our illness. Usage of the word sanity offends our false pride. We admit our illness but rebel against the question of our mental soundness. We come in, we get better physically, and we think we're all better. We think that's good enough. And you see it time and time again. Either they stay here and they drive us nuts because they think they know better, or they go back out and die. And we all know. The truth is that most of us have only acted insane during intoxication or to get that absolutely important drink. But acting insane is common practice to many drinkers who get tight. But to the alcoholic who shortens the spaces between his drinks and finally merges them into one long drunk, it becomes a serious matter. Years of abusing alcohol, years, changes the way we think. It changes who we actually are. We do things we would never do. Insane behavior because of one night's drinking is generally excused. People laugh it off. They say, oh yeah, you were funny last night. But when carried on for weeks and months, that lengthens into years, it becomes a fixed habit. Sponsored by the brain. Your brain sponsors your alcoholism. It tells you what to get it, how to get it. Overrides any maybe little fight you put up about it, because it's all powerful in there. We cannot overlook the harmful effect of the prolonged use of alcohol on the brain. The alcoholic cannot control his impulses. He lacks mental coordination. Nobody likes to hear it, but it's true. Continued use damages the brain and in some cases brings on insanity. Now this next sentence, or this next paragraph, is very important because it made a lot of sense to me. A simple definition of insanity is a disorder of behavior that occurs when the body impulses no longer are controlled by the brain. When you start doing things you never wanted to do. That's insanity. That is a legal definition. When you do things you don't really want to do. And in active alcoholism, and sometimes even early sobriety, we act on our impulses. Even though we know better, we still do it. And sometimes that makes us go back out again. Sometimes it overpowers us. It takes the combined effort of a group of people like this, a higher power, friends, to shout down that alcoholic impulse, because it's so powerful and it's so subtle, and it whispers to you and it tells you that you were too young, or maybe you made a mistake at one time, you know. We don't listen to the people who love us the most because we earned the right to drink. We start to rationalize. We start to say things that, you know, is really, to us, makes sense, but to the rest of the world, they think we're nuts. They really do. When this condition arises, I want to read that sentence again. A simple definition of insanity is a disorder of behavior that occurs when the body's impulses no longer are controlled by the brain. And I can relate a lot with that. I never wanted to go out and do the things I did. Hurt people, destroy things, break up stuff. And yet, I ended up doing it. When this condition arises, man's behavior is unpredictable and he becomes legally insane. That's why they can lock us up. Because we're not part of society anymore. The conduct of the uncontrolled drinker is likewise unpredictable. His friends and relatives take on a long face. As alcoholism perverts his power of reasons, dulls his talents, limits his instincts of self-preservation. We're invincible when we're drinking. Dulls his talents. How many people have we seen come in AA and shine and at Acts Anonymous or different venues that you see them at? They become witty. They become part of the group. When they came in, they were self-absorbed. And we get to watch that flower open up and grow. That's one of the greatest gifts that God's ever given us. A limits his instincts of self-preservation, making him irresponsible and a menace to society. That's the way they consider us when they look at us. I had a neighbor who had a 5-year-old son that was killed by a drunk driver. And he drives around at night looking for us. If he sees you weaving on the road or anything, he tries to pull you over. He calls the police. He can't stand alcoholics. And that's been going on for years. He can't stand the way we are. Being in a similar situation, I don't know if I would feel the same way. How do we account for that insane impulse to reach for that first drink that starts us off on another binge? Is it a sane act? Are we obsessed? Is it the result of an urge sponsored by irrational thinking? Does it involve thinking? Does sanity imply our power to accept or reject that first drink? So I got on step two. What I would like to do is maybe have some of you guys tell me about some of the things you did that you never wanted to do. I don't know. That's about all I got on that. On step two.
Thank you, Jim. Now we have the question and answer part. Remind you that all the comments are welcome in the form of question. Is there any questions?
Really?
Stories? None of you guys are insane, huh? You're all better now?
All right, we got one. We got to take her.
Well, I know you two guys are nuts.
Hi, Jim. Mary, an alcoholic.
Hi, Mary.
I don't know if this is an actual question. I'm not sure I've ever heard anybody talk about the insanity. I thought I was crazy. Before I came in the program, I actually was going to counselors because I thought I was mentally ill. And a lot of the things I did, I wasn't drunk when I was doing them. But my behaviors were so out of character for me. And I've never heard anybody say it like you did. And so I guess my question is, because you've heard people longer than I have, do you hear that where people say, I did a lot of things that were not normal and I wasn't drunk when I did them? You know, most of us like to tell our drunk stories. But I have a lot of non-drunk stories, if that makes sense. And you made sense out of that because it was that drinking pattern that affected everything. Could you talk about that a little bit more? Is that a common thing?
Sure, that's a common thing. If you sponsor people, you get to hear that a lot. Even in my early sobriety, I made dumb mistakes, you know. I thought I was going to join the service, and I went down to sign up, and I called my sponsor saying, hey, I think I'm going to join the service. And he said, what, are you nuts? He said, you'll never stay sober if you go in the service. I was sober maybe 6 months, and it wasn't mandatory at the time. And I'm glad he talked me out of it, because I probably would have went in the service, and I probably would have drank. Instead of going into service and maybe fighting in a war or whatever they do, I was put on a 12-step list, and I was doing service in another way. I was the young kid in AA at the time, so they had no qualms about waking me up at 2 a.m. and saying, "Hey, we got a 12-step call," and I'm talking 50 to 100 times. Over many years, and I think that would have been an insane act, because I had a wife, you know, we had no kids, but I was just going to go off and go into the service. Impulsive thinking, we do it a lot, you know, and you see that. There's a lot of times when you say something you wish you could pull back in, because you know it's wrong. Then you have to defend it. because you always have to be right as an alcoholic. We have that thinking that says, you know, you're wrong, I'm right. And it doesn't matter if it has anything to do with alcohol, it means to do with the world. We like to tell people, oh, I know that, I can fix that. We're still bullshitters. I mean, we're famous for it. We lied so much that we couldn't tell the truth. And that carried over, you know. I remember my sponsor saying to me, when we looked at the steps, and he said to me, exactly as they're written. Quit adding or trying to change it or trying to put your spin on it. It's like this study that I'm doing is from 1971. It's before a lot of the new stuff you hear out there today. Some of the crazy shit that's out on the from the rehabs that we get, like 90 meetings in 90 days. That's crap. We look for balance in life. We look to balance our sobriety with life. We look to become citizens. We look to become whole people. You know, it's easy. This may sound wrong, but I'm going to say it anyways. It's easy to become a Nazi in AA. You know, to pound the big book into somebody. But to be a father, to be to vote, to do simple things that we never did because you had an opinion and you're not going to do it. And you hear people today that still have opinions. And what is my response to an opinion? It's hard to do. Because I got this soaked up alky brain. Even after 40 years of sobriety, every once in a while, I'll think, that would probably be good. I've never had a light beer. I thought, that'd probably be good. They didn't have that back then. You know, they didn't have wine coolers and all the crap they got out today. And I thought, well, maybe that will change me. I won't be an alcoholic. You know, but alcohol is alcohol. Cunning, baffling, powerful, patient, very subtle. It whispers to you. It comes, and we don't think about drinking per se. Our brain is so screwed up that I will start a fight with you. 10 thoughts down the road is when that thought is, I'm going to get drunk, so I'm going to start a fight with her. Or I'm going to start a fight with my wife. Or I'm going to do something outrageous or outlandish so I can back my way into that drink. And that's how it all starts. You know, it starts by saying, I'm not going to a meeting tonight. I'm tired. The way back to a drink is so easy, but it's very, very, it's those little lies that you tell yourself. That's the old way of thinking sneaking back in, you know. I don't know if that answered your question, but that's what I got.
I'm Brenda, an alcoholic.
Hi, Brenda.
After listening to you just now, I'm like, I shouldn't have taken the mic. Because you said a lot of good things. But I'd like to answer your question first. And you said, does anybody here have cases where, you know, they did whatever, doing things that they didn't want to do? Yeah, I've done that over and over again. Sometimes when I wasn't even drinking quite a few years ago. But here's my question. I'm going to get in trouble for this because Sister Stephanie's next to me. I haven't told her this yet. So I'm driving down the road with a sponsee of mine going to the Brown Baggers, and a guy passed us so fast and almost hit us, and I chased him. Okay? And good for you, see? I chased him as far as the Brown Baggers, and Denise opened her windows and she says, you know, you could have killed us back there, and we're calling the police. And he goes, I don't care. Well, first of all, I lied. We weren't calling the police. Okay. But I found myself being like your friend whose son was killed, like hating the behaviors of alcoholics, and I'm one of them. You know, I'm the first one to come across to people like, why are you like that? Why did you do that? And that critical thing that comes out of me, you know, is you know what that's like, you know you are similar to that or like that. So I just want to know, do you still have, after all your time, thoughts of alcoholics in general, that they're, that everyone hates the typical alcoholic, but do you find yourself judging a lot of other alcoholics?
Well, I always judge people. That's just, I know it's not a popular thing, but I know who to hang around with in AA and who not to because of their message. If I didn't judge somebody, people would take advantage of me. I hear that's another rehab thing. We don't judge other people. We have to judge other people. Who do we hang around with? Who do we don't? But as far as your question is, alcoholics are angry people. And it only takes that. We think we're in such spiritual nirvana that everything's going to be great for the rest of our lives. It is not the absence of anger, it's what we do with it. The thing that saved me most was walking away. And that's the hardest thing to do. They used to say, give it 24 hours. Especially because I could just fly off the handle like that, you know. I was sober, I think, about 20 years, and a guy said something to my wife that was inappropriate. And you don't do that. So I walked up to him, and I knew if I punched him out, we were probably going to go to jail. So I told him, I said, look, you're old and fat. It's going to look bad if I beat you up in front of all these people. I said, get back in your car and go back to Pittsburgh where you came from. Thank God he got back in his car. Because if you know Loretta, she has a... you know. So, and I'm always the one who gets the brunt of it. But, we have this thing that we think since we're sober, other people should bow down to us. They should fall in line. We think that because we're working so hard on our sobriety that other people should just kiss our butts. And that's not the way it is. All we're doing is actually living life the way it should be. But we think we're doing something special. We like to take our disease and we like to throw it out there. Maybe the pharmacy will have something for us. You know? And, I'm working so hard on these steps. How dare that person look at me? We get mad when somebody else gets a promotion. And we think we should get it. We get mad for just about everything. You know? And the thing is, an old timer told me a long time ago, probably 30, 40 years ago. He said, the curse of sobriety is awareness. We're aware of everything that goes around us. We're hyper aware. We're an old Indian told me up in Windsor, Ontario. He said, or I think it was up in Canada somewhere, in a tent. That was a weird thing. I slept in a barn that night at an AA function. But he told me that alcoholics are super sensitive people. They hurt easily and they don't suffer well. And that's what we are. We are so sensitive. It's like we quit drinking and our hair starts to rise up and we're anxious. We're the only people that I know of that are always in a hurry to get somewhere to sit down. That's us. And God forsake that we have to stand in a line. This is 2018. Why should I stand in a line? They have computers now. You know, I still get anxiety in airports. I get anxiety in long lines. I get anxiety when the TSA people tell me to turn around and check me over. They even say to me, why are you nervous? They say it to me. But you know what? How do you overcome that? How do you overcome standing up here? You do it. How do you overcome singing on stage at Acts Anonymous? You do it. You do these things, you put one foot in front of the other until it's not so bad. There's still underlying anxiety, there's still a little bit of Can I do this? See, when I was sitting there, you know, I'm thinking, what the hell am I doing here? I don't know. You know, all I can tell you is what was taught to me by a bunch of old crazy people that I used to get really mad at. They used to have what they called the hot seat. And I would go over to their house and they would say, you're sitting in the hot seat. And they would take my inventory. People today are very thin-skinned, as we were then. But they took our inventories in spite of our thin skin until we get scars on it, until we start getting a harder, thicker hide. Nobody likes to hear that they're wrong. Nobody likes to hear that they're messing up. But we have to tell them that. If you're friends with somebody and you see them messing up and you don't say nothing, if you're a sponsor and you don't say nothing, then you got to live with that. I don't want to live with that. If I see somebody driving off a cliff, I'm grabbing the wheel. You know, they can hate me the rest of their lives. As long as they're alive, I don't give a shit. That's the way it is. I had the... I didn't want to talk about God on this step because I'm going to bring God into the next part of the next step. But the mental aspect of sobriety is so important. We have people who... before they get mentally better, they run. They don't. They think it's too hard. We always hear that saying that it's, you know, it's easier in here than it is out there, which is a load of crap. This is the hardest thing you'll ever do in your life if you want to get better. To become a human being and not an animal anymore. When I was out there drinking, I was an animal. I did things I would never do sober. I can't even think about it. And today, you know, I actually enjoy the fact that you know, in my family, three of them have degrees, college degrees. I don't have one, and yet they come to me for help because I have you. My son said last year to me, he said, Mom, to me and Loretta, Mom and Dad, you two are the sanest people I know.
Wow.
Which, you know, and he called me yesterday and he said, you're going to be a grandpa again.
All right, yes.
So that's I'm going to have a grandson. And it's important for me to say this because I want AA to be here when he gets here. That's important. It was there for me. Everything I do for AA is because somebody did it for me. They took time for me. I don't know why they did. I was astounded, you know. I was a young man when I came here, and they would sit and talk to me after meetings. We would go to... And we didn't talk about AA. We just talked about life in general. And I think that's important. I heard somebody once say, we need more storytellers in AA, which we do. You know, we all like to sit around. We wouldn't like to sit around. Maybe Jerry would remember and listen to Six-Pack Charlie tell one of his dumb jokes. You remember. Yeah. And we used to do that after meetings all the time. We became bonded. And we aspired. You know, the difference between humans and animals is we aspire. We aspire to be better than what we are. We aspire to become like other people. They used to talk about that thought went right past me. Senior moment. But anyways, it cannot be as a sponsor. You must be thorough when you sit down and explain to a newcomer that it's going to take time to get better. We all look at these old timers who sit back in their chairs and their life is good and they have a car and a house and the family and the two dogs and we say, wow, you guys got it made. But they went through the exact same thing you're going through. The indecisions, the fear, the overwhelming sense of dread that you're going to die. And then after you get it all, you're wondering, say you got 20 years in the program, am I going to lose it? So you have that fear. It doesn't matter. No matter what happens in my life, and I'm going to say this before I shut my mouth. No matter what happens in my life, and this has happened to me since almost day one, I've had this overwhelming peace that no matter what happens, everything's going to be all right. It's going to work out the way it's supposed to. When my wife came down with cancer, when I had my heart attack, when my niece passed away, when my sister died, when my mom died, I mean, I can go down the list. All that happened in AA. I never thought about picking up a drink. I didn't have time. I had friends who were talking to me constantly. They came over my house. They surrounded me because, left to my own devices, that mental crap like they talk about in here comes back. And I'm so grateful for that, because you can only watch so many movies. You can only watch sports so many times. You can only do certain things. But the interaction between the two alcoholics is magical. It's a spiritual experience. I've had many overwhelming spiritual experiences in the fellowship, and those have sustained me when you guys aren't around or whatever. So, yeah, I don't know if I answered your question, but we have to talk about this. We have to talk about mental illness. We all know people, and amongst the old timers, and I'm going to let you guys on a little secret, there's always one person at a meeting that's a little bit odd. And you all know who they are.
Yeah, we do, yeah.
And, no. See what I mean? That person may have gone too far. And if they come back, we don't know. They may have gone too far. They think they're perfectly fine. They do. But, you know, the mental aspect of it can't be downplayed. It's just, I've seen it happen so many times. Impulse thinking, irrational behavior, over and over again, making a choice that we regret. I just can't stress it enough. Is there any more questions?
Yep. Thanks, Jim. Hi, I'm Helen. I'm an alcoholic. Jim, I really appreciate the fact that you stress the restoring to sanity and what sanity is all about. Too much of our literature, of course, goes into more detail, which you have already said you're going to. But just briefly, how did you come to believe that there is a power greater than yourself that could do this for you?
I had a Bill Wilson experience when I was 21 years old, and it was an overpowering thing. I don't ever speak of it. Yep, I had the whole thing, the whole nine yards. So I never, like when I said, I've always had this overwhelming feeling that no matter what happens, everything's going to be all right. You know, it's hard to describe something like that. You can't. You just can't. So.
Mm-hmm. Are there any more questions?
Thanks, Jim. Jeff, alcoholic.
Hey, Jeff.
You know, I think of this insanity while we're in these rooms, and I'm not going to say I've never had this thought before. When we see people time and time go out thinking, you'll be different for me. You know, you know, that insanity. I mean, how do you work through that? You know, whether I don't know if you work through your sponsor. I'm not going to, you know, I'd be a liar to tell you, saying, you know, maybe it'll be a little different for me. You know, even when we see case studies, we see people out there, we hear stories about people, every time we know it gets worse.
Being the most self-centered people in the world, which we are, we think we can beat anything. We at that omnipotence or God complex where we think that we're the one who's going to change everything. It may have been because maybe we had early successes in life and we've overcome other things. But when it comes to alcohol, like it says in here, we are powerless. And sometimes some people have to die. And I've seen many people die. I do everything I can humanly possible, but I'm not God. I carry a message. I don't carry no mess. The message is, if you want to stay sober, then come in AA and stay. But like I said, it's the hardest thing you'll ever do in your life because you have to change. Change is hard. When you're used to living on the streets, when you're used to being in an environment that everybody's lying to each other and conning each other and stealing from each other, I've gone into the prisons for years and I've seen the same thing. You know, it's a continuation of the same mindset without the alcohol. You know, so and that's why this step cannot be overlooked. It has to be worked diligently. It has to go over and over. When you get to your fourth and fifth step, by then you should be ready to maybe look at them and face those without fear. Because this step here, you've already realized, is you do have a mental illness. You know, so it's not an excuse. It's just the way it was. Now what do? We get better. There are people in Alcoholics Anonymous who make dumb mistakes and do stupid things, and sometimes they're condemned for it. As long as they stay sober, what's the point? Just keep coming back. Be a dumbass and keep coming back. But keep coming back. It's better that you maybe do something stupid and you keep coming back than to use that as an excuse to go back out. And if you do go back out, come back. Don't let your ego say, I can't do that again. Those people are going to say, no, we want you back. We want you to come back. Please come back. Nobody's going to give you 40 lashes, you know. It's not what we do here. We welcome you. So, I don't know if that answered your question.
Any more questions?
All done?